We haven't quite worked out how we're going to do this yet, but we'll introduce ourselves to start with. I'm Fran Beckett, and my day job is I'm Chief Executive of the Church Urban Fund, which was set up nearly 20 years ago by the Church of England to respond to that groundbreaking report, Faith in the City. And we seek to support and resource and equip initiatives, faith-based initiatives in the poorest parts of this country. But my spare time, I live in Peckham, and I lead an inner-city church plant there called Restore, which is a bit experimental and trying to actually engage relevantly with people who perhaps normally wouldn't get involved with church at all. Bob.
Thank you, Fran. I'm what's that? Okay. Yeah, I'm still here. My wife says I'm a bright spark. But Bob Holman, I'm a granddad. Now, that's the most important thing to me. I don't care what you think. In public the other day, one of my grandsons says, I tell the most amazing corny jokes. I mean, this is one of the greatest compliments I've ever had. But apart from that, I've spent 25 years living and working in deprived areas and doing other things, and it's about that I'm going to speak now. In Britain, there is an enormous voluntary sector. It's made up between the big boys, the large national voluntary organisations who've got incomes in excess of £100 million a year. Then there's the small ones, the neighbourhood groups, mainly in deprived areas run by a handful of staff, the kind of organisations I've been involved in for 25 years. Now, what do these small organisations do? Well, they run youth clubs, they run groups for women, they run holidays for children. We've just come back from a holiday camping in Lincolnshire. My 31st year in succession, that's where my hair went white, and had a great time, sunshine like this. Community groups run credit unions. They run food co-ops. They try to help excluded children. In other words, they respond to what is going on in their neighbourhood. The one I've been associated with for the last 15, 16 years is called FAIR. Family Action in Rogerfield, the district, and Easter House, that's the area in East Glasgow. I mentioned three features of it because they're the features which are common to nearly all neighbourhood groups. The first is this. It's got a committee made up of local people. Not outsiders, not the bigwigs, not even councillors, people from the neighbourhood who've been elected to serve this committee. It's theirs. Secondly, the staff and the volunteers tend to be local people. Nearly all of ours come from East Glasgow. This means that, for instance, some of the staff there, that they are paid, but their money goes back into the local neighbourhood. They don't move out to another community to spend it. It also means that because they live there, they're known there, that they can react very quickly. Let me give an example. A woman was rehoused in the block next to our building, a hard to let. She was in rent arrears. Almost as soon as she got there, she had a chip pan fire, which ruined her cooker. She's, this is the end. Everything happens to me. This is the last straw. But our project, well, it can act quickly. Immediately, volunteers were in there, cleaned up the kitchen, which was in a terrible state after this fire. Project staff recruited her children into the clubs, and the committee managed to raise a grant to pay for a new cooker. And I remember this woman saying, at last, there's light at the end of the tunnel. The project leader, who relates very well to this, to her, she began to help her with her budgeting. It took a long time, but after nearly a year, she'd repaid back her rent arrears and then was rehoused by a housing association. All this happened within a year. Because the project is there, it can react quickly. The third thing is that it's long term. It's been going since 1989. This is not a three-year initiative that's going to fold up and people leave. They're there. People are committed for a long time. Now, about 10 years ago, when I was just old, not elderly, and I decided that, well, Annette and I felt, well, we're getting past this, and we asked the Lord to send a replacement couple, but much younger than us. Now, the Lord did indeed answer our prayers. A young woman came to do a community work project, a placement with our project. I got talking to her. She was a Christian. Her husband was a social worker. And she said that she and her husband were committing themselves long term to work in a deprived area. I said, you found it. And indeed, within a while, they'd rented a flat in the very street where we lived. 8 years later, three children later, they're there, their children starting at local schools, and they have a tremendous Christian influence on the neighbourhood. So these are the three features then. Local, long-term. Now, what does FAIR do? You're fed up with listening here and me already, aren't you? I can tell. So I'm going to show a DVD, or a start of a DVD, which was made by one of our young staff. He's 19, and he made this DVD. I think it's pretty good, apart from the bit about me. Okay.
This has included the delivery of youth clubs, sports clubs, workshops in schools aimed at reducing territorial tensions, media groups, mentoring and befriending of young people, and holidays. Parents and families access the cafe and learning centre and receive support and advice from our family support worker, who also arranges the distribution of gifts at Christmas and practical support to families in need.
Started there. We thought we must have something to continue this, and so about 30 of us met together, and FAIR started as a public meeting, and it's always been the point that this has been run by local people. And then in 1996 we managed to move into this building, a tenement block, and it's really grown since then, because we've had our own base and it's been possible to get money in form of grants.
she likes it.
Would he not like a bit of fun?
What?
Would he not like?
When it's time up, we will shout. Do anything else?
Do you have any stills?
Aye.
So, it'd be better if we didn't have any stills in the club?
No, then we would have slept.
Fair tries to broaden horizons and raise expectations by providing opportunities and challenges that may not always be readily available at home. Each year, Fair enables around 100 children to go on holiday. They get the chance to meet new friends, visit new places and try new things. This may see them getting sand between their toes, camping under canvas, abseiling, horse riding or sailing round our coastline. Day trips to the cinema, bowling or ice skating are also a feature. Things most people take for granted, but are for some families luxuries which are just beyond their budgets. Fair have also...
Okay, stop it there.
Their career they will both enjoy and benefit from.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Do you know, this year the fire service asked Fair to work with it because for some reason when firemen come to our area, they get attacked. Perhaps because they're uniform or I don't know. And so they asked Fair to work with local teenagers when there were fires. And it's just been recorded that there's been a 90% drop in the number of attacks this summer in fire-related incidents. You see, we're so successful. Actually, I'm lying because that's true. But last night I had a phone call. A young guy I've known since he was 8. He's now 26. I've known him in and out of care, in and out of prison, in and out of mental hospitals. Been doing well lately. A phone call last night. He's been nicked again, back inside. And you know, when that happens, you get this horrible sick feeling in your stomach. But the important thing is, we'll stay with him. You know, he's not a unit. He's not a number. He's a human being, and Fair will stay with him. Now, some people say, well, what's Christian about all this? You know, secular social workers can do this. Yeah, absolutely. And Fair, in fact, is a secular organisation. It's not a Christian organisation, although some Christians work for it. But I believe this. If Fair, as the social work department says, prevents some children going into care, if Fair diverts some kids going away from drugs, I think that is the kind of kingdom that Jesus wants. I think that's an overlap between a secular organisation and a Christian one. So, we are doing Christian work. Now, the big problem of Fair, and with this really I'll finish, is, guess, money. We can't get money. I'm not going to ask you. You look poorer than me. I won't ask you. But, you know, what's happening in the voluntary sector at the moment, in some ways, is very distressing. In 1997, Tony Blair promised that he was going to empower local communities. Hooray! Oh, great. Well, what's happened? What's happened is this. The big rich charities have got richer and the small poorer charities have got poorer. Incredible. In Britain today, there are 18 super charities who take an eighth of all charitable income. The 60% of charities at the bottom, they get 1.4% of all charitable income. And one of the reasons for this now is that the state is pouring money into the big charities, mainly through contracts. So that, for instance, some of the big charities, 50 to 90% of their income comes from the state. Are they charities? Anyway, because more local authority money, more central government money is going to the big charities, they've got less for the smaller ones who used to get grants from local authorities. The National Association of Voluntary and Community Action, 14,000 members from groups, says last year 68% of local groups had a drop in their income and numbers are facing closing. Well, this is the fact. The groups that are at the hard end, the groups that provide what local people want, the groups that use local people to do the work, they're the ones who are suffering financially. It's not a fair world, is it?
He finished before I thought he was going to.
that's
amazing. Okay, we want to give some time for question and comment, although with a room this size, it's maybe a little difficult, but we'll have a go. What I'd been asked to talk about a little bit in light of some of the, if you like, pictures that Bob has been painting about what life is like in Easter House, but also the very real pressures that local organisations are under, is really to ask the question, where's the church in all this? And where's the church in communities like this? And as Bob has rightly said, what he's about as a Christian is actually being good news in that community. But there is a place for local churches. So I'm going to talk a little bit about where is the church in all this? And I'm going to use a PowerPoint just to bring up some main points here. Okay, where is the church? I want to ask a number of questions and, if you like, make comments in light of those questions. Bob has already highlighted the issue of the church being there and staying there, Christians actually coming and staying. And looking at, first of all, the church and its priorities, this whole thing of being there and staying there is so fundamentally important. You know, I've got a lot of time for year-out schemes and gap schemes and all the rest of it, but actually, that's not what local people need. They need people who will identify with them, become part of the community, and stay. And not just stay for a year, but really stay. And that's a big challenge, I think, for many of us. But equally, the church often is the one group that does stay, where the professionals come in and they go away again. The church is often the one local organisation that does stay. But the importance of being there and staying there is so important in our poorer neighbourhoods, in rural communities, in coastal towns, where issues of deprivation, issues of pressure, on a sense of community well-being are very much a reality. And for our churches, the challenge is this whole thing about what are we about? Are we trying to just keep the show on the road, keep maintaining what we've always done, or are we actually driven by a motivation which is about mission, about the purposes of God in the world? And in Church Urban Fund, we have the privilege of being alongside literally hundreds of churches around the country. And we see some amazing stories and hear some amazing stories of tiny little congregations of largely people over the age of 60 who said that we're not here just to maintain this church. We're here to actually be about the kingdom of God in this community, and who work and pray and are just part of what that neighbourhood is about in an amazing way. There are all sorts of unsung heroes and heroines out there, I would say. But equally, for many of us in our churches, the challenge is, are we about maintenance, doing what we always did because it seemed like a good thing to do? Or somehow we've got to defend our territory? Or are we actually about mission, serving the purposes of God in our locality? Now, obviously, in that, there's the whole understanding of mission, and that is, there are books written on that, and there are seminar streams on that, and all the rest of it. I suppose all I want to underline, and in a sense I probably don't need to, a green belt, is that my understanding of mission, anyway, is that social justice and compassion and social action are integral to mission. They're not an add-on. They're not an opt-in or opt-out. They are at the centre. They are part of the purposes of God, of the good news, if you like, of God in our world, is his commitment to justice and human flourishing and community well-being. And we as Christians need to get on board with what he's doing in that. But for our churches, then there's the challenge of looking at what that means. And different churches of different churchmanship work that out in a whole range of ways. Now, let's go back. Just one thing. Another thing that probably would take weeks to talk about, but personally I get really excited about, is that community lies at the very heart of the Godhead. I don't begin to understand that in terms of Trinity and all that that means. And again, there are vast libraries of books on these things. But what is very clear is that at the heart of who God is community. And if you look at the story of God's people and the story of God's dealings with human beings, community is this theme that runs all the way through. I guess we could conclude from that that community is very important to God. And therefore, as churches, for us to invest energy, resources, time, money, commitment, being there-ness into the building and celebrating and affirming and strengthening and enabling of local community can only be a good thing. And where is the church in its priorities? Is that one of our core priorities in our churches? Or is it that we're spending all our time trying to get people into the church, sitting on the pews or whatever it is people sit in your particular church, as opposed to actually being there with people and being that good news, as well as taking the opportunity to share that good news, having earned the right to do so. Lots of stuff there that we could look at. I'm going to rush on. Where is the church in its attitude to people in all that? I come from a particular stream of churchmanship where very often what has been the thing to do is to rush in with the answers. We get on our white chargers and we're there to the rescue. And there are good hearts, really good hearts, people who really want to make a difference, people who really care. But the attitude is not necessarily always the right one. Because if we really want to be people who are about tackling some of the issues that Bob has been highlighting and earning that right to be part of the solution, then we need to be people who listen. People with two large ears, as John Stott said years ago. One ear to hear where people are coming from, the reality of what life is like, and the other ear to hear the cry of God and what God feels about all of that. So the whole listening and affirming of where people are at, very, very important, rather than thinking that we have all the answers necessarily. I guess it's to do with a little bit of humility. Now, churches get engaged with local communities, and what's been very exciting is if you look back through the centuries, the history of the church in engaging with need and justice issues and expressing compassion. But you have different ways of churches doing it, and many of our churches do it in a way that we do things for people. And again, it's very laudable, very worthwhile motivation. But actually, if we keep doing things for people, what does it actually say to that person about their worth? How does it help them develop their own way of engaging with the issues that are impacting them? If you take the model that Bob has been sharing, that's been being among and working with, and indeed going further, actually seeking to empower local people so that they themselves can be, if you like, the answer to the issues that they want to grapple with. And there's an enormous challenge for us, I think, in our churches, because as we move from that spectrum of doing for to doing with to empowering, we have less and less control. We have less and less power, if you like. And there's a whole debate about church and power, which we won't probably go into now. But you can see how actually working with, or indeed seeking to create opportunity and work in a way that people are empowered themselves, means that who we are and what we are is far more on the line. Far more on the line. And this whole thing of importing culture, I'm unashamedly middle class, I'm white, I come from the West Country, and I live in inner city Peckham in southeast London. And when I walk up Rye Lane, there's Anna, she lives there too, Peckham High Street, if you like, I am in the minority. I'm surrounded by people who are from Africa or with roots in the Caribbean or whatever. I'm very much in the minority. And one of the things that I have to learn in all that is the importance of that wonderful richness of different cultures. And rather than seeking to import and impose my middle-class white culture, is to find ways that we together, as we work in the community, can be people who are people of the locality, if you like. This whole thing of expecting people to do things my way or our way as churches is quite a challenge. You're still with me? Goodness me, is it me and I'm having hot flushes, or is it really hot in here? Are you going to survive? Just, I'm so sorry. They've been trying to get air conditioning in here, but it hasn't arrived yet. Have I sent you to sleep yet? No? Okay. I'm going to whip on very fast because we want to leave some time, and Bob may want to respond to some of these things anyway. Where is the local church and its attitude to God in all this? Because I would like to suggest that actually our distinctive is the fact that we're Christians. And we need to be careful that we don't lose that somewhere along the way. And this is an interesting one, I think, because as many of us journey along a path, not quite knowing where we're going, and seeking to be people who are engaged with the world around us, seeking to be listeners and learners and people who are humble, yet we need within that not to lose that core of what it actually means to be a Christian in that. And our beliefs, if you like. And for local churches, the church I'm in, we're very keen on people to have the opportunity to belong. And our boundaries are very fluid, rather than people have to sign on the dotted line and believe everything before they can be part of us. But it doesn't mean that we don't have a core of what we actually believe. But what we believe in our churches will actually shape our behaviour and how we engage in the neighbourhoods where we are and beyond. And surely we believe in a supernatural, loving God who's at work in the world. And in that, I think the challenge for us is to get in on what God is doing. If we believe in a big God, then he's already at work. So it's for us to spot what he's up to and get in on that, rather than thinking we are the answer. Sometimes I find I can be incredibly arrogant in thinking I've got the answer, whereas in fact God's already been dealing with situations, and God's at work in people's lives, people who don't begin to acknowledge him. He's at work in community groups. He's at work in relationships. And it's about spotting what the Spirit is up to and joining in, not hindering it, but actually being part of it in a very real way. Other thing in that, I guess, is that God is spotting where God is at work in people, and how he's present in people's stories. Sometimes we have our beliefs here and our engagement with people here. And actually, if we believe that God is at work in the world, then he's at work in people's stories, looking at what he's doing in their lives. Where there's signs of redemption, where there's signs of hope, where there's signs of new beginnings, where there's opportunity just that, sometimes that word, sometimes just that encouragement or whatever. But it's not so much about the words, it's about actually having a belief that shapes our behaviour, that God is at work in the world around us. And that means when there's struggles for funding and when we go with people into a local council meeting, is actually asking God to be very present there and asking for his help in that, for expecting God to change people's hearts and minds and taking opportunity to pray about that. It doesn't mean about beating them about the head with a big black Bible or whatever, but it's this sense of God alive and active in his world and that walking the walk with us, but also having gone before for us and being present there. There's the whole thing of where's the church in its nature and its shape? Because all of this is very well, but if we remember in John 1, verse 14, where it talks about Jesus becoming flesh and blood, in the Message version of that, it talks about Jesus moving into our neighbourhood. I love that. Jesus moved into our neighbourhood. It wasn't that he just came and sort of floated 6 feet above the ground, but he really moved in terms of becoming fully a human being and was located in time and space and place. Do you know, it's very interesting. The Department for Communities and Local Government are very exercised at present about what they call a sense of place. and place shaping, and about community groups being key in shaping place. It's the latest jargon thing. You know, used to be social exclusion, and it was something else, then it was something else. It's now shaping place. I don't know if you've come across that one yet, Bob. But and, of course, faith groups and churches, it's being argued, are very important in shaping place. In other words, contributing to how local neighbourhoods actually look, how they function, how communities gel together or not, how they work together, and so on and so on. You know, Jesus got there first. He moved into the neighbourhood in such a way to say that place is very, very important. And I was talking with someone earlier about some of the new expressions of church that are around. And one of the problems with that, I'm a great believer in some of it, but some of it is throwing the baby out with the bathwater, quite honestly, and saying that place is no longer important. Place is important. God put his feet firmly on the ground, if you like, in Jesus. Said place was important, and how place looks, how people experience place, how people participate in place, very, very important. And by the way, Jesus prayed in John 17:18 and said, we're sent into the world just as Jesus was. That whole thing of incarnation, of being with local people. I guess in terms of where is the church in this and getting engaged and getting involved, we have to ask, well, what are the main drivers for the shape and nature of the church? And for many of us, the main driver is, well, church has always been like that. Or this is how we want church to be. And some of the fresh expressions and emerging church experiments are unashamedly middle-class experiments of people who are disillusioned with church and want to try something different. Others, I would say, are much more positive than that. They are actually saying, well, what we believe about Jesus and his mission in the world will shape what sort of church we're going to be. So often we start with, this is the church we're going to be, and this is how we're going to go about evangelism and mission, and we'll take Jesus with us. Actually, the biblical approach is you start with Jesus and what you know about Jesus, and then what you know about God's mission in the world, and then, if you like, and what the world is that you're going into or part of, the community, the neighbourhood, and then you say, well, this is the sort of church that will actually best be expressed in that sort of context. That's a whole thing in itself. But one of the things about church is this whole thing of being there with people. And the nature and shape of our church either sucks us into perpetuating church, or it enables us to be part of what is going on around us. You have to ask yourself, what do you spend your time on in church? Does it actually equip you, inform you, encourage you, challenge you, and enable you to be, if you like, whole life disciples in the world around, and grappling with what it means to be a Christian in a post-Christendom society, in a world that has less and less room for Christians, and the state doesn't quite know what to do with us in that. And so in all of this, with local community issues, the shape and place of the church, the nature of the church is very, very important. Now, these are all big subjects in themselves, but I guess I just want to conclude, because we want to open up some time for some discussion. The thing of, I guess, the word advocate, the church as an advocate, do we speak for local people, or do we stand with them, and do we enable them to speak for themselves? In the Church Urban Fund, we have something called CuffX, which is around projects, church-based projects around the country, and churches around the country engage in local communities who have opportunity to make their voice known to government. Now, the challenge for us is to make sure that actually it's the local voices that are heard and not just the professionals and the experts. It's the challenge for us is to make sure that it's not Church Urban Fund's voice that is heard, that as it goes through all the various filters, that's what gets heard. And for us, as people who are in local neighbourhoods, who are in communities that may or may not have the sort of issues that Bob has been talking about, where do we do our listening? Where do we walk the talk? Where do we actually, if you like, get our feet out of the church door and go and be church where people are? There's a huge number of issues that we could grapple with and all of that. But in terms of the state and the church, which I noticed in the programme this is being profiled at very much, questions are distinctiveness. How do we retain distinctiveness? Second question around how do we actually go about the task of mission in terms of justice and compassion when you hear stories such as what FAIR are grappling with? Where is the church in that? And thirdly, what shape of church are we that actually means that we can be those that engage? Hopefully between us we've given you a few tasters on that, but there's a lot more. And don't forget, God loves community. Community right at the heart of the Godhead. I'm going to stop there and see, Bob, is there anything else you want to say?
No, I'm past it. Let's get the experiences.
Okay. Issues, challenges, questions. I'll take them, repeat them for the tape, and then I'll ask Bob to respond to them. Anything? Yeah. Yeah. Nice and loud. Okay, that's great. Good question. Bob, the question was, you know this word power, she who has the microphone has the power. The question was, for the sake of the tape, what's distinctive about us in terms of doing this stuff? You know, we could be doing much the same as any secular community group or voluntary organisation. How do we answer the challenge of saying how we are distinctive? Is it enough just to say we're doing it because God wants us to do it and it's an expression of his love?
Yeah, well, I think it's right that we're not different in many ways. And we should rejoice and see it as part of God's work when the kind of thing that pleases God goes on. Not by Christians. I mean, I remember once I was walking down the road and I saw this 17-year-old girl and her baby being ejected by neighbours from a flat. They just got all her stuff, black bags, baby, while she was standing there. I phoned the housing. She's a squatter. We can't help her. Social work wouldn't help. I must admit, I was reluctant to take her in myself. Just then, another lone mum comes down and says, well, come in with me. She wasn't doing it on Christian grounds. But I think what, I've written a book about F.B. Maher. He always said that there's a gleam in everybody. There's a divine gleam in everybody. And I think we should rejoice when people who aren't Christians do work which God approves of. But there is a bit of extra. There is a bit of extra for Christians because, don't let's forget, we have not a hidden agenda. It should be an open agenda. We also go in because we do want to stand, we do want to witness for the Lord Jesus Christ. And in our project at FAIR, nothing is done at FAIR to say, you know, come to camp, come to a Christian organisation. Although I hope people's lives show that. But by living in the community as Christians, then I think we also show that we are a Christian outside of the project, inside of the project. And I think we shouldn't be ashamed of that is one of our agendas. We do want people to come and know and love the Lord Jesus Christ.
If I could add to that slightly, because whilst I agree with much of what Bob has said, because our God delights in seeing community built and people's lives turned around for good, and he loves justice and abhors injustice. From my experience, I guess at a local level, we would take opportunities sensitively and rightly to ask someone if we could pray with them, pray for them. Not, will you come to church, or will you, do you believe in Jesus? But we recognise everybody's on a journey, and there are different places in that journey. That's why I get very excited about the fact that God is active in the world around us, and it's about spotting where he's active in people's lives. It may not be anything particularly overt. And there's nothing to be ashamed of in saying, I believe in God. Would you mind if I prayed for you? And you need the sensitivity to say, well, to do whether you do it there and then with the person, or you go away and do it quietly. But I don't think we need to be ashamed of these things. And there's a difference. I think some of us are in reaction mode. We're in reaction to models and methods of evangelism that, quite frankly, have often been quite insensitive and have failed to see the person. And the problem is we go too far the other way, and we feel like we can't say anything about God. But if we as Christians are about the mission of God in the world, it's about people experiencing the wonder and fullness of God is. And justice is part of that, but it's not all of it. So I think I just want to add that dimension, really. Other questions? Yeah. Okay, question around the statistics that Bob gave earlier about the proportions of funding going to the 8 or so super charities in comparison to the very small percentage that's going to a very large number of small charities. Where's the bit in between going, because of the figures that you gave? And secondly, is there anything that we should be doing in terms of addressing government about the imbalance there?
Well, the bit in between is going to what we call moderate-sized charities. Those probably with an income of over £500,000 a year. What I should add is it's not just government money that is making all this difference. It is also interesting that the big charities now are so well equipped to raise money. They've got professional fundraisers, and they've got celebrities, that they're also able to pick up more money from the public, and indeed more money from grant giving trusts, children in need, sports relief, and so on. And I mean, what sometimes does annoy me is that a large national charity will get a grant to run a good project. Don't get me wrong, I believe that big charities do run good projects. They'll get a grant from a national trust to run this project. At the same time, they've got enormous unrestricted reserves. I mean, look, just study their accounts sometimes. See what they've got in unrestricted reserves and indeed in assets, and you will see the imbalance. Should we be making a difference? I think, we as Christians should be bringing this to the attention of our MPs, but more, I think, we should be bringing it to the attention of people who give money to charities, which includes churches, and say, where is the money most needed? Where is it best spent? Is it by local people, or is it by big charities who would do it anyway?
To be fair, in some senses, the government has recently been trying to address this from a central government point of view. So you have community foundations in a number of areas where the whole aim is for them to be about local funding. And the government is just putting some more money into those. They've just announced that. And they're trying to drive decision-making about where local authorities spend their money, local strategic partnerships and the others spend their money at a local level. there is, I think, a genuine attempt at that in some parts of central government. However, it gets lost along the way. And local authorities and regional development agencies and others are busy trying to work out these sorts of things in the context of who they are and how they function as organisations. And what you find very often, Church Urban Fund, we did some research last year into how faith reps, representatives of faith on local strategic partnerships, actually how that worked and what their issues were. And what came out resoundingly from that, although you had quite a number of people, say local clergy and people like that, on local strategic partnerships, which were supposed to be about making decisions about priorities and where local money goes, that so very often they had A, very little voice, B, they weren't representative anyway because they happened to be a clergyman or clergywoman, but actually in terms of them having opportunity to consult back and also the voluntary sector representatives on those, it's the same issue. They're supposed to be representing the voluntary sector, and yet they're not really representing anybody. And that there's some huge dilemmas in that, and those are the sorts of things that need tackling at local level. So whilst many of us feel we probably can't do a lot at national level, at local level we can be doing things about this. If you have a local strategic partnership, if you have a community foundation, how are they actually engaging, doing that listening that I was talking about, as well as the empowering of local people to actually participate? There's some interesting stuff going around presently, which I think is very exciting, on what they call participatory budgeting, which is ways, and there have been a couple of pilots the government are keen on, and Church Action on Poverty have done some work on this, which is all around ways in which local people can have a very real say in terms of how local money is spent. But they're like drops in the ocean, really, these things. Other questions? Yeah, at the front here. Living in poor areas can mean quite a lot of sacrifice, presumably. How do we cope? Bob, how do you cope?
Yeah. I married Annette. I think living in a deprived area, you do need people around you who work with you and in some ways protect you. I mean, I've known in times past when the, 12 o'clock at night and our doors bells rung and Annette's beaten me to it and said, no, we can't do any more. You need to bring a team around. You can't do it on your own. And in fact, I think if you have got so much pressure, it's all coming on you, you've got to say, am I doing the job properly anyway? Because where are the people who should be doing this? And when I first started this 25 years ago, in South Down in Bath, I was lucky enough to meet the local thug, who happens to be here today. This thug had become a Christian, and when he became involved in our project, he was very much the ear and the eyes, and people could turn to him. And gradually we built up people like him. And so, I could bear it because I was getting support from them, but they were also taking pressure off me. Where is that thug? Is he here? Tell him to stand. Hey, thug, stand up. There he is. You see, yes. That's not a glass one. I must say, I think, because Dave Wiles, I think, is a great example. I can remember a young bloke, I spoke to him about Dave once. He says, I never spoke to him because he gave me a good kicking. But Dave is an example of a local person who, A, became a Christian, and because he became a Christian, wanted to put something back into his community. And 25 years later, he's still doing it.
Yeah. Bob has been on that journey much, much longer than I have. And one of the things that we, at a local level, in my own church situation, that we're praying about, tussling with, working towards, is having a community house, which is a bit like a modern-day friary, if you like, where there's going to be a big pot of soup on the go all the time in a big kitchen, and people can come and go as they like, and there'll be space for the kids to play, and there will be patterns of prayer, and it'll be about a group of people being there for local people rather than the Lone Ranger, as Bob was talking about, because the stories are, there are so many stories of people burnt out, people who are youth workers, people who are community workers, people who are vicars, whatever. And whilst we can get excited about and get impassioned about the importance of all this, we need to do this in a way that actually doesn't just leave the Lone Ranger to get on with it on their own. And some of us, the very ones of us who love to change the world, are the ones that are most risk of being the Lone Rangers. And we need others around us to actually tap us on the shoulder lovingly sometimes and give us a hug and tell us we need a break and generally put in those sorts of safeguards. And, of course, Bob talks about his wife in that. Many of the people involved in these sorts of things are single and therefore have particular issues and vulnerabilities in that. And that's why the togetherness is so important. Hand right at the back there. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. A story there of someone who lives in a community like that and just saying take opportunity and revel in the moments when you are engaged with the rawness of life around you. It's exciting because if you actually have a view that God is at work here and it's spotting what he's doing, it's not just the horror or the difficulty of the situation that you're about. There's a sort of God dimension in it, which is very important, and that in itself can be quite refreshing and encouraging. Something from over the, sort of this side of the room. No, down here.
They come and they contribute money, but they don't live in the area.
Yeah.
They are more than half our church. Now, there's a pattern whereby if you've made it, you move out of Birkenhead. You might come to Birkenhead, but you move out. And that's got a really bad effect on the people who are left, who are labelled the losers. We don't sort of work. We don't. And are you issuing a challenge to the wider church, the people who've moved out, moved on, who think it's a natural order to move out and move on? Do I just say no?
Absolutely. Story told of here of a church in Birkenhead that actually has a number of people who've gone off, perhaps got better jobs, gone to university, come back, lived in the area but not the immediate area, just come to the church, put money into the church. The church would probably collapse. That's an interesting question, would it really, if it didn't have the money of those people and in some cases I suspect the energies of those people leading the worship and things like that, running the Sunday school. And this whole thing of the church growth people used to call it redemption and lift. That when people became Christians, that very often the next step was that they would move out of the inner city or the outer urban estate or the poor rural community or the dying seaside town or whatever onto better pastures, because becoming a Christian means you better yourself, and that's the automatic assumption. I think there is a serious challenge to us here and to us as Christians, to the church, about what is God saying? God calls us to be good news. He calls us to move into the neighborhood and be in the neighborhood, to identify with people as Jesus did. He calls us to be good news to those who are poor, which means actually taking the principle of identification and actually being there. But unless we teach it in our churches, unless we model it in our churches, unless our denominations and church networks actually resource that and encourage that and help people and train people if they go to theological college to get a grasp of that sort of end of mission, then actually that issue that you're talking about will be perpetuated again and again and again. Never heard a sermon on that. Okay, how many people in this room? There's a lot of us in this room. Why don't we start saying these things if we're not saying them already? We may not be the people in the pulpit, but we might get the opportunity for an article in our church magazine. We might be able to put a blog on a website somewhere. I think it's not just down to one person. It's down to all of us to say these things are important. But the problem is then we have to do something about them ourselves. There's a challenge. Yeah. Down here.
Do you think the church has lost confidence in the gospel of mission?
Huge question. Do we think the church has lost confidence in the gospel of mission?
Don't look at me.
What do you think, Bob?
I think it's got confidence in the gospel of mission, but it hasn't always got the confidence to carry it out. It's one of those things. We're good at theory, we're not good at putting it into practice. But I do think there is a shift, I think there are now a growing number of examples of young people, and not so young, who are moving back into the inner city and indeed onto public housing schemes, and numbers actually moving together as a group to move into deprived areas. So I think there is a shift. One of the interesting things about where I've lived in Easterhouse Baptist Church, was that a similar kind of pattern, to a certain extent, happened, that people from the area got converted and moved out, and one of the problems is that their children still come to the church, but they are different from the children who actually live in the area, because they come across the other side of the Edinburgh Road, as we say. But the other interesting thing that's happening now is that, because there is now more low-cost housing, which you can buy in places like Easterhouse, I think there is now greater opportunities for people who do become Christians to actually stay in the area, but still get your own back and front door, as I say, still buy your own place. So I think there is a shift, both in opportunity and in mission.
I think it is a big question, because there's a bigger context, which is about where are we as Christians in the wider world now. And actually, Christian faith is in the minority. We are in a society that is moving from where Christianity is an institution and a shaper of society is no longer seen as relevant or credible in that, for all sorts of reasons. It actually then leaves us with some very big questions about how we connect. Most of our churches are geared towards trying to attract people into them. The gap is getting bigger and bigger that people have to bridge, and that churches have to bridge, to actually succeed in attracting people, unless they happen to be people like us. People often say to me, well, what about the big churches that are really flourishing? But if you look at the section of society they're going for, it's quite a narrow segment in terms of certain types of people who are like us. But if we're talking about engaging with people who for generations have had no real connection with the church, people who for generations have been grappling and struggling with issues in a community that has always had struggles, then the gap is a very big one. And I think that's where the challenge to the church and the opportunity for the church in terms of going and being church there and building church there, rather than trying to attract people into us to take on our cultural style and our way of being, that's what we need to do. But that does take confidence, not in the church, but in the God who is the head of the church and who actually forms church in terms of its nature and structure in ways that are relevant for particular times. That's what we need to have a bit more confidence in, I would suggest. And there are hands around the place, and we've already gone over time. I think we probably do need to close, because it's gone 1:30, and I guess you guys would like some lunch. Some of those food stalls down there are great. Do go and have some lunch, and thank you so much indeed for suffering in this very hot room. Thank you. Oh, can I just say, as you go out, you'll be given some literature, And if you would like the opportunity of hearing some voices of people in the sort of situations we're talking about, then visit the Church Urban Fund interactive sort of exhibition as you go out that way. And by the way, there's a competition there that might mean you win a free place to Greenbelt next year. Okay, thanks very much.